Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
This is Love Sport.
They were clinical and we weren't. A good wake-up call. Two quotes from the weekend, Craig Cathcart and Javi Gracia. Because the Hornets lost 3-0 to Brighton on Saturday for their first defeat in 13 opening day games. We've got Andy Lewis from the Hornets Nest with me. It's the Watford Fan Show. Of course it is, on Love Sport Radio, with you through until 8pm this evening. Andy, how are you, mate? Are you okay?
I'm better. Yeah. Yesterday was a struggle. It was dire, to be honest, Matt, and I'm quite glad that it's now Sunday and it's in the past. We focus now on Everton and we don't need to talk about Brighton. We can just forget it ever happened.
Yeah, not going to let you get away with that one, I'm afraid, there, mate. We're going to be talking about it. And actually, before we get onto it, first things first, we were brought in by Zed Cars, as we always are, as were Watford yesterday. It was back. We talked about it on last week's show. It came back. They walked out to Zed Cars. Everyone's happy, but it's not really worked out, mate.
Yeah, so obviously last week I was talking about the mentality, the players getting in the zone, and maybe I'm still standing at the end of last season sort of disrupted that. And so when Zed Cars was played yesterday, there was a huge roar from Vicarage Road as we came out to our classic tune. And then Watford were rubbish. And maybe it was nothing to do with the walkout music of Watford's season collapsing last year. Maybe it was just the fact that Watford were pretty bad. Maybe the music just had nothing to do with it. But we needed a positive to take from yesterday after what happened in those awful 90 minutes on the pitch. And so Zed Cars is that one positive. It's back to normality. And sadly, the normality of Watford playing pretty poorly has also resumed.
So we've obviously got to dive deep into this. I mentioned that Craig Cathcart said they were clinical. We weren't. Javi Gracia said it's a good wake-up call. Both have obviously said, first game, we'll brush it under the carpet and then we'll kick on next week. It didn't start too badly. A couple of chances there. There's the stat that I've seen everywhere about the fact that Cathcart won his first three duels with Glenn Murray, who's obviously very,
really?
Very good in
the air.
So he won his first three duels, one of them emphatically so, and everything was looking rosy. And then it all went very, very sour.
Yeah, the first sort of 5-10 minutes were really good. Watford were really intense. We were closing them down. We were winning the ball back, and the crowd were up for it as well. And when Vicarage Road start to get buoyant and get behind the team, it makes for a really intimidating atmosphere for the opposition team. And you felt like, right, football's back. We've got this, you know. We've all clearly missed football over the summer, and it felt like a good day. And then suddenly, not even suddenly, Brighton just managed to get themselves back into the game. Watford just started looking a little bit devoid of ideas and tried to be a little bit too narrow, with De La Feo on the left and Hughes on the right, both cutting inside. And every time we went in, Brighton just kept getting lots of men around the ball and just winning it back. And I don't think Watford really... I think we had maybe one shot on target that I can recall in the first half. And for some bizarre reason, Watford then started to lump the ball. It was pretty much lumping the ball up towards Deeney and Gray, Deeney trying to bring it down. But Brighton's centre-backs, one of them's almost 2 metres tall. Mm. And I just didn't understand the logic of why we were doing that. And as the half went on, Brighton, in fairness to them, played really well. I thought Graham Potter set them up exactly how they should have been if they wanted to combat Watford side with Decore and Kapu in the middle. A bizarre own goal to open the scoring came from a loose ball in midfield. I think it must have come from Dawson or Cathcart, one of the Craigs. We call them Craig 1 and Craig 2, one for Cathcart, two for Dawson. And they broke up the pitch, and then the cross came in. And as I looked at it, I thought the ball's just going out of play. And Holobas jumps up for the header. Obviously, didn't know who was around him, so someone hasn't given him the shout. And Brighton get the ball back in, and somehow Decore turns it into his own net. And that passage of play kind of summed up Watford's whole afternoon. Really sloppy passes, poor communication at the back. And second half, it kind of just went from bad to worse, and Watford didn't really have a response to a good Brighton side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, was there any part of you that thought that perhaps Watford underestimated Brighton to an extent? I mean, Gracia did say, you said, you know, we prepared. Brighton played three at the back in pre-season, and that last game against Valencia, they played three at the back. They did so again yesterday. They were ready. There was this, I mean, we talked last week about the fact that perhaps the double sessions in training had pushed the players too hard. And then yesterday, the excuses come out that, oh, perhaps they weren't ready. Perhaps they weren't fit enough. Was it just one of those days where Brighton were simply better?
I think they were clearly better than us. But they set up how any team should set up if they want to beat Watford at Vicarage Road. If Watford are playing with four in the middle, it was very obvious to see the three men in the middle of Brighton's midfield clearly outnumbering Kapu and Doucouré and forcing them into several mistakes and forcing them to either play backwards and the defence to dink it over the top of midfield. It was a really sound tactical performance from Brighton, and Watford just bizarrely didn't have a response. And when we set up with, I really don't want, it's the first game of the season, I'm feeling really negative and moaning a lot, and I really, really don't want to. But it was really, really poor. People are coming out saying that it was one of the worst like performances in Premier League since we've been promoted. It was honestly that bad. And I don't want to be saying that about a team that reached the FA Cup final and recorded a record club points total last season. It feels bizarre to be sort of talking about that. So we can put it down to a blip, but I think we definitely did underestimate Brighton a little bit. They kind of came in as sort of an unknown quantity, having been, you know, battling relegation last season, then relegation favourites, or one of relegation favourites this season. And I thought they did really well, but in fairness, they didn't really have to do that much to beat us.
Like you said, that first goal, obviously very sloppy. Abdoulaye Doucouré with the own goal. How did he bounce back? Obviously a summer of not quite sure what was going on. The bids came in from Everton. He stayed at Watford. There's been big clubs circling around him for the best part of 2 years now. He obviously scored the first goal at Vicarage Road in his own net. How did he respond?
It's difficult because I think a lot of heads dropped yesterday. Especially after the second goal. Like, yes, own goals happen. He scored an own goal against Spurs last season, and we went on to win. So it kind of just deflated everyone, including the crowd. Everyone was suddenly thinking, was really quiet, and I don't think we even had a shot maybe after we conceded that first goal. There was a lot of sloppy passes, a lot of mistakes from a lot of people. Communication wasn't what we have come to expect from this Watford side. And bearing in mind that Watford side that we saw yesterday, there was only one new face in there. So it was pretty much the exact same team that sort of finished last season. So at times it just kind of felt like, my mum said, like they just never met each other. It was bizarre and just a horrible, horrible way to kickstart what we would hope to have been an incredible season. So,
well, it's interesting you say that, and you reference the FA Cup final and the fact that the last game of last season was lost, emphatically so. Lost three consecutive home games for the first time since 2013. Obviously, in the Championship then, you went to lose five on the bounce. But I guess the last thing you wanted was a slow start after that defeat on the final day. You have had a slow start. Do you think there is a hangover still from the back end of last season and that poor run?
It's really, really difficult to quantify. I would say if we lose to Everton, then possibly. It's impossible to say, really. I think the atmosphere in the ground definitely is a definite no. There wasn't a hangover. I think the supporters were ready. The atmosphere for the first 5-10 minutes was brilliant. Fans were on their feet. It was incredibly noisy. It felt like the start of the season. And then as the game went on, it kind of actually became less of a new season feel and more of an end of season kind of game, if that makes sense. Like last season against West Ham in our final game, obviously it was our final league game. It was just before the FA Cup final. It was kind of players just sort of going through the motions of, yeah, this is the final game. We can't achieve anything with this. We can't reach Europe. We can't get relegated. Kind of just felt like going through the motions. And that kind of was how I was feeling towards the end or during the second half of yesterday's game. Watford were just chasing shadows for the second 45 minutes. And Brighton, in fairness to them, they were more clinical. Really, just bizarre defensive mistakes for each of the goals that we can pinpoint. And I really do hope that the players take some or have some reflection on this and use it as that wake up call, because that was poor by any team standards in this division.
You said as early as the first half, tactics kind of reverted to route one, lumping it up to Troy Deeney and Andre Gray up top. Did any part of you feel like Grazia got the formation wrong? Diolafeo, obviously, in a slightly less advanced role, should he have been up top with Deeney?
See, when the teams were announced, I thought this was a good team. And last season, there were instances, mainly it was Deeney and Diolafeo up front, and then Gray could come on as that impact sub, which we saw work numerous times last season. And I actually quite liked the starting 11 that Javi picked, with Diolafeo on the left-hand side going to cut in, and the Deeney and Gray partnership trying to get going. Gray's been really good in pre-season. He scored, I think, 4 goals in 4 or 5 games. And so, you know, it's not like these players are coming in and are unfamiliar with their positions. They know what's demanded of them. They know how Javi wants to play. And I was actually really happy with it. But as the game went on, you sort of, if it wasn't working, tactically it did need to change, but we didn't have that impact sub in Gray to come off the bench. Like, looking at our bench yesterday, it did seem very weak without the likes of Welbeck and Saar on there to come on, who obviously aren't fit enough yet to play after having signed late last week. And so it kind of, the natural thing I think we should have done is gone to that 3-5-2 formation, almost match Brighton in the midfield. I would have loved to have seen Domingos Keane yesterday. Sadly, he didn't make the bench through injury. I think someone like him could have really opened up the game for us and got us back into it. We had, I think Cleverley was on the bench as well. He was just an extra man in midfield to sort of combat that and maybe take one of Deeney or Gray off. So then we could go a sort of 3-5-2 with Diolafeo up front with Deeney and try and revert back to something that we're maybe a little bit more familiar with. But as the game went on, without that impact sub on the bench, success came on, didn't really change anything. That's kind of the story of his Watford career so far. It was just really, really frustrating that we didn't switch it up earlier, and then as soon as we went 2-0 down, you kind of felt that was game over. And then the third goal was another poor one,
the kind of goal that you'd expect on a break,
kind of goal that we'd expect. Yeah. And then the game's gone, and Brighton were just, by the end of it, in the sort of final sort of 5-10 minutes, Brighton were just passing the ball around and Watford were just sort of letting them have it. It was really disappointing to see, and some of them even looked a bit tired. And I know you mentioned last week the double sessions. Some of them didn't look ready for the new season, and I don't want to sit here talking about, you know, one of the worst performances to kick off our season, because there's potentially another 37 games like that left to go, and I don't want to sit through another 37 of them. But yeah, really, really, really disappointing way to kick off the new season.
Just a quick word on a man who did come off the bench, obviously Roberto Pereira. By the way, this has always been up for discussion. His surname, Pereira. What are you saying?
I say Pereira.
Pereira.
Yeah.
Just standard Pereira.
Just standard Pereira.
But spelled in a slightly different way.
I'm sure he pronounces it somewhat differently, but I think the Watford match commentator, John Marks, pronounced it Pereira.
Pereira, perfect. And he, I'm sure, would have spoken to the player
exactly.
Himself.
Yeah.
He came on earlier than expected, and a lot of chat this weekend, and I've spoken about it at great length on this station over the past 24 hours. VAR, I detest it, absolutely hate it. Not good for the game. I think we've gone beyond the point of no return now, but I'm not going to rant about that on this show. However, there was a free kick that struck the arm of a Brighton player. It looked, on the replay, like it was a free kick. We have VAR now to clear up these decisions. When you've seen what has been given over the weekend, especially at the London Stadium between Manchester City and West Ham, where Raheem's inch of his left shoulder is deemed offside, that was a penalty.
Do you know what? Watching it back, I think it was. And I'm not sure. So the criteria handball has changed somewhat. And I find it bizarre that in Wolves' game today, they had a goal disallowed because it struck the arm of, I think, Bonny in the build-up to the goal. And so that's chalked off because it's struck his hand regardless of whether it's intentional or not. Yet when it's the other way round and it's the defending side hitting the arm and it's impacted the ball potentially reaching the target, that's not deemed, whether it's intentional or not, that's not deemed a handball. And the rule states that if the ball hits the hand that's raised above shoulder height, then automatically it's a foul and a penalty or free kick is awarded. The difficulty with this one is that I think it was Glenn Murray whose arm it hits. He jumps in the wall. And so suddenly that arm over shoulder height suddenly becomes maybe, what, 1-2 feet higher than it would naturally be. And I think the other aspect of the rule is that if his arm is outside in an unnatural position to his body, which technically his arm's not tucked in, his arm is out, I personally don't see... I can't really sit here and complain because we do have the technology and we do have the replays now and some qualified referee looking over it, but it's deemed, you know, clear and obvious. And to me, that clearly and obviously struck his arm, and I think it should have been a penalty. But it's bizarre that we're now... I don't want controversy around it because we had controversy before the technology, and now we've got the technology and we've still got controversy.
Of course we have.
We can never win, Cabby. It wasn't a penalty, and I think Brighton would have still won anyway because we were rubbish.
That's how the analysis should go. That's what Alan Shearer and Ian Wright should be saying, and Gary Neville and all the rest of them. That's a much easier way of putting it. We are going to speak a bit more about VAR later on in the show with the captain of the Watford ladies, Helen Ward. Bradley Hayden is coming up next, owner of the A Trip Down Vicarage Road podcast. But before we go to him, just one last question to break up this segment, this slightly pessimistic assessment segment.
Slightly?
So I have to say. I did say that you suffered your first defeat in 13 opening day games. Mm-hmm. What was the last one?
Everton.
The score?
2-0.
It was 2-1.
2-1. Did we score?
You did. Andrew Johnson, Mikel Arteta put Everton 2-0 in the lead.
Oh,
and then
ask me who scored.
Okay, go on then. Yeah,
2006, Darius Henderson.
Close.
Marlon King.
No.
Ashley Young.
No, we could be here a while. The beautiful Damian Francis.
Damian Francis.
An absolute good-looking man if ever I saw one. So, yes, 2-1. And a friend of the show, loves sports, very own Dickie Lee, was on the bench that day. Of course, Ben Foster was on loan at Watford. He is now back at Watford. We'll be speaking to Bradley Hayden next.
This is Love Sport.
Yep, this is Love Sport on the Watford Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, with Andy Lewis from the Hornets Nest. We are happy Hornets.
We're happy now,
Andy.
We're done.
Happy, happy Hornets.
That was my cathartic 15 minutes that I needed.
It's out of the way.
And now we're buzzing. We're happy.
We're buzzing. It's over. New record signings this week,
yes.
Mate. Ismail Assar, he's in. Danny Welbeck's in. He's going to rediscover his form.
And we're going to beat Marco Silva's Everton next week.
Absolutely.
Come on.
I forgot about that. It's a grudge match, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
A real grudge match. Of course it is.
It's a Zedcars derby, again.
It's only happened once, right? You haven't been to Goodison when he's been boss.
Yeah, we went there last season. We were 2-1 up until the 96th minute and they equalised. And that was the first reuniting of Watford and Silva. And then we beat them at Vicarage Road.
How are you feeling about Silva? I don't want to bring it back down again, but are you okay now?
No, yeah, to be honest, that's completely in the past for me and many Watford fans now, I think. You know,
needs to be.
It was last season, it was there, it was a thing. We got 4 points off him. This season, you know, forget about him. Forget about him. I'm glad Richarlison's doing well.
Forget about it. He's gone. Marco Silva. Who needs to know about Marco Silva? We want to know about Bradley Hayden because he's on the line now, owner of the A Trip Down Vicarage Road podcast. Bradley, how are you doing?
Not too bad, mate. How are you doing?
Very well, mate. You're on the line with myself and Andy. I don't know whether you heard, but we've had a cathartic opening 15 minutes. We've banished the demons of Brighton. But now you're on the line, we're going to ask you about it all over again. What did you make of the game yesterday?
Hugely disappointing, to be honest. I thought it was almost like a pre-season game, to be honest, because any sort of negative verbal word you could use to describe that performance from Watford, and you'd probably have a pretty accurate description of how they played, to be honest. Pretty lethargic. If you look at Brighton's goals, they've got so much time and space. I don't think there's any sort of Watford player out there that I thought had a good game. We struggled to create many opportunities. It looked really sort of disjointed and in possession and just devoid of any sort of ideas. And it's certainly up there when it comes to sort of, I wasn't expecting that in any way, shape or form. And it's up there, one of the the worst opening day performances I've seen from Watford. We had a pretty decent record when it comes to opening day performances. We sort of not lost for so long, and I almost felt like we underestimated Brighton to a little bit. I thought we could just, and I think Ben Foster's interview after the game sort of summed it up. He sort of was saying that they almost thought they could just turn up and get a victory, and that's never sort of the case in the Premier League. But you can't take too much away from Brighton because they played really well. They've got something good going there with Graham Potter at the moment, and they, no complaints from me with the end result really, because they fully deserved that 3 points in the end, and perhaps they're unfortunate not to have one or two more.
Hi there, Bradley. Andy here. We've identified one positive that we can take from yesterday is that Zedcars returned as Watford's walkout music. Where did you stand on that whole Zedcars I'm still standing debate?
Well, since I've gone, ever I've been to Watford, I've always sort of grown up with the Zedcars music, and it always gave me goosebumps whenever it comes, and always sort of part of the match day routine with the Chemical Brothers and all of that. And I sort of remember when we had the goal music, when we had sort of the dance music back in 2008 when we scored a goal as well, and it sort of brings back memories of my first game. To be honest, it was the goal sort of how, what music we walk out to doesn't bother me a huge amount as long as we're doing the business on the pitch. Started to warm a little bit to I'm Still Standing towards the end of the season, but I do sort of feel that Zedcars was the sort of the only way back really for Watford, because clearly not too many fans liked it, and it's part of the match day routine. And yeah, I think for supporters it's very difficult to get out of to get used to change, and we've had to do it a lot with Watford over the years, the way the stadium has evolved, but some things are just best left untouched, and I think that's the case with the walkout music now.
Absolutely, Bradley. We don't like change, you are correct, and I think as soon as these stigmas are attached, it starts to create unnecessary psychological pressures, I think, for players. So we'll just leave it as it is. Zedcars is the intro music. What was your opening game, by the way? You alluded to that then, your first game at Watford. Which one was that?
I saw us beat QPR 3-0 in 2008. It was Malky McCarthy. We just sacked Aidy Boothroyd. I wasn't a fan of football till then. I used to go to the Hereford Academy, so I used to get free tickets to games, etc., because they were sort of sponsored by Watford. And I thought, I've got nothing to do this weekend. I've got a couple of tickets. I'll go and watch a bit of football. And from then on, I was hooked. I saw Tommy Smith score. I saw he wanted to be a Watford legend. And fortunately enough, I know Tommy quite well now, having interviewed him for the Trip Down Vicarage Road podcast, and I believe Darren Ward and Lee Williamson also scored that day. So from then on, I was hooked, and I got a season ticket shortly after that, and I've been going back ever since.
Now, you've just mentioned it briefly there, Bradley, a Trip Down Vicarage Road podcast, and you've interviewed Tommy Smith as part of that. For fans listening who don't know what it is, tell us a little bit about it and the players that you've been able to interview already.
Yeah, so basically, I just wanted something to do in my spare time. I thought there was a gap in the sort of podcasting market when it comes to Watford. We've obviously got great podcasts from the Rookery end of the Ronnie Ramage podcast, and of course the Love Sport Watford radio show as well. But I thought there was sort of a gap in the market for a podcast which caught up with former players, because we don't really, apart from the Towers From events which Adam Leventhal has set up, we don't really get to hear very much from former Watford players, and there's certainly quite a few out there. We've had quite a few under the pot shows, and we've had quite a few before that, so I thought it'd be quite good to speak to former Watford players about their time at the club, what they think of the team at the moment, and we've got some good traction with it so far. I kicked things off with Love Sports' Richard Lee, and since interviewed Tommy Smith, Lloyd Doyley as well, he was great to speak to. We've interviewed Micah Hyde, who's now at QPR as part of their sort of community trust. Most recently, I've spoken to Nigel Gibbs, Watford legend, who some may remember as Paul Clements' assistant at Swansea and Reading, and from his time as assistant manager to Brian McDermott at Reading as well. He's now back in the game doing some work with Tottenham's under-23s. And the next podcast, which I'll be releasing over the next few days with will be with former Watford striker Marvin Sordell, who's in the news recently, having announced his retirement from the game due to mental health problems and other things behind the scenes, and he's sort of fallen out of the love of the game. So it will be an interesting chat about the mental health side of things, what he's doing now, what he's looking to do going forward, and of course about his time at Watford, the Usain Bolt celebration, and some interesting stuff about his dealings with Lawrence Bassini, who's in the news at the moment with his attempted takeover of Bolton at the moment. So, we're just looking to speak to as many Watford, former Watford players as well, potentially a few coaches and former managers as well, talking to a couple of other people at the moment to see if they'd be interested in chatting to me as well. But just trying to speak to as many former players as we can and just talk about the good old days at Vicarage Road and some of the best, some of the fan favourites, some of the best moments, hopefully. And hopefully Watford fans start to listen to it a bit more and will enjoy it as much as I do.
Well, that's nice, Bradley. That is the players of old, of course, which is like we spoke about Nigel Gibbs last week, in fact, and his memorabilia room in his home, which is fantastic. It seems to have kept everything from his playing career. Those are the players of the past. Just quickly, we've got a couple of minutes before you go. New players, Ismail Assar has obviously come in, a record fee for the club, around 25, a bit more than 25 million. Obviously, that surpassed the fee that was paid for Andre Gray a couple of years ago. And Danny Welbeck coming in as well. Those two late arrivals for Watford. What do you make of those two?
Yeah, really positive. A couple of people have said to me, why are you sort of going for Welbeck with his injury record? But for me, I think it's a bit of a win-win situation for Watford, because it just shows how far the club has come in 4 years, that we've now got an England international on our books, and we're prepared to spend £40 million on a winger who's been linked to Arsenal as well. And with Welbeck, we're not talking about some old England international who's not played for sort of 3 or 4 years. This is a guy who last played for England back in November as well. He was part of England's sort of Nations League campaign, and I don't think Watford can lose from that one with Welbeck, because if he comes in and performs well, I fully expect him to. You sort of look at our squad at the moment, and on form, you'd say he would probably be our best striker. And he's got form. He's done well with Manchester United, done well with Arsenal when he was fit and played as well. And then I'm sure if he gets back involved with Watford, starts playing, starts to enjoy his football again, then I'm sure Watford will make a massive profit from him. And if he gets back into the England squad as well, then that's a massive boost for Watford as well, because we've had Nathaniel Chalobah in there recently, and he made his debut briefly last year as well. But it'll be great if Welbeck got back into the England squad as well, and we'd make a healthy profit from him if he does well. But if not, we've only paid his wages, and it's a free transfer. So I don't see how Watford can lose from that. With Sarr, a very exciting signing. I've heard a lot about him, seen a lot of him in recent years. Obviously impressed against Arsenal in the Europa League last season as well. And for me, I think to get the best out of them, I'm not sure if you discussed this earlier, but for me, I'd like to see Watford potentially change formation and see sort of Welbeck or Deeney up front with the likes of Deulofeu and Sarri beside of him, because I think now we're getting to a point where in our squad we've got a lot of players, and I don't necessarily think that 4-4-2 will play to Welbeck, Sarr, Deulofeu. And you look at other players we have in our squad, I don't think 4-4-2 necessarily plays to Will Hughes' strengths. And we've got good quality players like Dominguez Quina, who we've got high hopes for, and Daniel Chalobah when he's fit.
Absolutely, Bradley. Sorry, mate. Well, I'm going to have to cut you off because we've got to go. It's been great to hear your thoughts. But just before you go, where can we find the A Trip Down Vicarage Road podcast?
Yeah, you can find us on Twitter at Vicarage Road Pod, and you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Acast by searching A Trip Down Vicarage Road.
Nice one. Bradley Hayden, thank you very much for joining us. This is the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport. Next up, it's Helen Ward, captain of the Watford Ladies.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with Andy Lewis from the Hornet's Nest. Right, we're going to speak to Helen Ward next, but before we get to that, I just want to get your views on the new arrivals that Bradley just discussed briefly then. Ismail Assar has come in for a record fee from Rennes. Obviously, some fans might have seen him last season when Rennes won the Coupe de France against PSG. He scored the decisive penalty. Sometimes when you do that, it puts you on the map. people notice you. Watford had obviously noticed him and brought him in for a record fee. And Danny Welbeck as well has come in. Vows to be better than ever at Vicarage Road.
Good. I was really pleased, actually, because I think before the final 2 days when we had only signed Dawson and Tom Delibashiru, I was a little bit apprehensive. I didn't think we'd done enough, especially compared to the likes of Everton and Leicester. But Welbeck coming in, I think, was a very, very shrewd move from the owners. Free transfer. Apparently, it's a pay-as-you-play sort of contract. So we're not paying his high wages unless he makes an appearance, which I think is just it's a sensible move. If we can keep him fit, there's every chance that he can shine in this Watford side, because I think if he can get maybe sort of 10 to 15 goals per season, possibly 20, who knows, probably a bit high, but there is a spot there for a consistent striker in this Watford side. And Ismail Assar, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know much about him or that I watched his match-deciding penalty for Rennes last season. But when you break your transfer record, it's only a sign that your club's growing, and this guy comes with a lot of promise. We saw yesterday how Watford's bench didn't look that strong with Saar coming in into the starting 11 and someone dropping down. The only thing it does is just boost our squad and boost that morale as well that you sometimes need. You know, we saw De La Feu when he came in January, the squad were on a low and he came in and was the catalyst for Watford, sort of improving on their season and almost keeping us up in the division at that time. So I'm hoping Saar will have that same sort of mentality and same impact that De La Feu had when he came on board.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, if you think about the game yesterday, what struck me was the fact that Graham Potter did that double substitution, took off Lucardia and Murray and brought on Andone and Maupay, two strikers for two strikers, four decent level strikers, not sure about Lucardia, but three definitely decent level strikers at Brighton in the Premier League. You've got that now. You've got Andre Gray, you've got Deeney. If that doesn't work out, you've got two other options there. I think and I hope Danny Welbeck is a very, very shrewd signing this market. Like you say, cost absolutely nothing from Arsenal. To speak a bit more about that now, we've got Helen Ward, captain of the Watford Ladies. Helen, you signed a new contract this season. What's in store for the Golden Girls?
First of all, hello, and thank you for having me on.
Not a problem. Delighted to have you on.
Yeah, there was never any doubt about me staying on for another year. As long as they wanted me, it's a place where I feel very much at home. And, you know, we're progressing things on and off the pitch at the club at the moment. Very much integrated with the sort of men's side of the club, if you like. You know, we're training at the training ground and little things like that all make a big difference. Training an extra night a week as well, which obviously going to help us with our preparation for game day. So, yeah, that side of things has been taken care of, and we've made one or two really good signings and hopefully a couple more before we take to the pitch next Sunday for our first league game. So things are looking good, and we're really hoping to mount a promotion challenge this season and try and sustain it throughout the whole season this time and not have that dip in the middle that we found we had last year.
Hi Helen, Andy here. Obviously we had the huge event over the summer of the FIFA Women's World Cup. Firstly, what did you make of that tournament? Did you think that the USA were worthy winners?
Yeah, it was a fantastic spectacle. It's the biggest Women's World Cup I've ever seen, and probably anyone has, because I think each cycle of World Cup is improving the game every single time. And the coverage it received was fantastic. The BBC did a great job of showing all the games, and you know, there was so much. There was wall-to-wall coverage, and you couldn't go on social media without seeing something. So people were talking about it. You know, not always good things, but the fact people were watching it and then talking about it is a good thing. And yeah, the USA, I you know, like many others, called it from the outset that they'd go far in the tournament, and it wasn't a surprise to me to see them go on and win. Even when they don't play well, they've got that mentality to get themselves through games. And you know, against the likes of France and England, they had a tough route to that final, and they did very well and fully deserved the win, in my opinion.
So, Helen, just for those who I guess perhaps aren't 100% aware of the structure now in the women's game in this country, everyone, of course, knows the WSL. What happens thereafter? And can you just explain whereabouts on the pyramid Watford Ladies are?
Yeah, of course. So obviously, like you said, you've got the WSL, which is the fully professional league in this country. Every team up there trains full time. They've got excellent facilities. A lot of them, you know, very much like ourselves, are integrated with their men's section, and they'll train at the training ground. Not all of them, but a lot of them do. They get the best sort of support on offer. They get good medical cover. They get the time to rest and recover when they need to and not have to get up and do another day's work the next day. Down from that, you've got the Championship, which is sort of the in-between. It's semi-professional, but there are one or two teams that are edging towards the professional side and doing a lot more to support their teams, like Aston Villa. There's a new team called London City Lionesses who were Millwall but are now their own entity, and I think from what I've heard they're doing a lot of good things. So that level's picking up as well. I think there's still a bit of a gap between the two, and I think Tottenham may find that out when they go up to the top league this season, but you know, that it's for them to learn and to grow, and hopefully they'll do okay. And then we're one down from that in the National Premier League, where there's two sort of levels either side of each other. You've got the northern and the southern section. Obviously, we're in the southern section. And if we win that league, then we'll go up into the Championship alongside the winner of the northern section. So it's, we're at tier three at the moment, which is a decent standard, but people do have to juggle it with work and family life and everything like that. But I think, from what I've heard from a Watford point of view, is that we're very much in it to go up this season. That's our plan. There are one or two other teams that will obviously give us a run for our money, and we have to make sure that we're focused every game and don't let things slip. But yeah, the aim is to get back up into the second tier, and then from there, who knows? There's all sorts that can happen.
You did mention London City Lionesses there. We do see teams that align obviously with their clubs. Man United Women reformed last season and got going, obviously got promotion, a brilliant campaign there first since they went defunct, I think it was around 2004. So 15 years they'd been pretty much out of the game. They returned with a vengeance. But London City Lionesses, you said obviously they were part of Millwall. They've now gone and done their own thing. Do you think we're going to see a trend now as the women's game grows in the country, that entirely new franchises, new teams are going to be formed?
Yeah, I guess there will. And you know, you look at the NWSL in America, and a lot of them are their own entities. They do sort of work alongside their men's version, if you like, but they're self-funded. They're their own clubs. Over here, I don't know, because football, obviously, in this country and in Europe is so huge, and the big names come with the clout of, you know, the shirt, the kit, the badge, everything like that. And as long as the big clubs are interested, then they're going to keep their women's teams going, and they're likely to be the most successful. You know, you look at Arsenal, Man City, Man United now, like they're really putting a lot into their women's teams. And I think you may get one or two that buck the trend. But I think for now, I think the top teams will remain the ones that are alongside their male counterparts. Like you said, London City, they've got an investor behind them. I think they've got a little bit of money to spend, and they could well buck that trend. But for the moment, I think the ones that seem to do the best are the ones that are next door and aligned with their male counterparts.
And Helen, how's pre-season gone for the Watford ladies? A first league game away at Portsmouth next week. How's the atmosphere and preparation gone in for that game?
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been positive. We started off with a bit of an iffy result where we lost 7-4. It was one of those games where every time one of the teams got the ball, it looked like it was going to end up in the back of the net. But we're playing in a different way to how we did last season. We've got, as I said, a couple of new faces, some of the younger players coming through. So it was a bit of an eye-opener and sort of showed... We'd only had a couple of sessions together at that point. But from then on, we've improved each game that we've played. We beat Lewis, who are in the league above us, in a friendly 2-1 a couple of weeks ago. And we've had a couple of good results since then. So we're going in full of confidence. But I'm sure Portsmouth will too. I think they've had some good results themselves. So we know it's not going to be an easy one. We had two really good games against them last season where we were fortunate enough to come out on top. But you know, things change so quickly in football, and in particular in women's football, there's a high turnover of players in the league. So we're going to go over to Portsmouth with expectations high, but not, you know, without showing the respect that they deserve. And you know, we're going to have to be on our game to get 3 points, but if we can do that, then it'll be a fantastic start to the season, of course.
And just to let us know, Helen, obviously you guys have got that first home game against Oxford. So it's at King's Langley where guys can find you, and that's where you play.
That's right, yeah. So it's I think it's had so many different names, that ground. But yeah, we'll go with King's Langley Football Club. That's where we base ourselves. And generally speaking, our home games are played on a Sunday afternoon. So if you find yourself needing something to do and want some entertaining, then come along and get behind us. We could really do with your support, and it makes a huge difference when you've got a crowd behind you that are willing you to do well, and we want to make that a bit of a fortress for ourselves. So yeah, the more people that can come along, the better. And if you've got a season ticket for the men's, then you can get it for half price. So what more could you want?
Brilliant. Helen Ward, thank you very much for joining us. That was Helen Ward, captain of the Watford Ladies. Right, next up, we have got the exciting legend of the week. Can't wait to see who Andy has got lined up for that. And we'll be looking ahead to the game against Everton next week too.
This is Love Sport.
This is Love Sport Radio. And me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 10 p.m. this evening. That is the Watford Fan Showdown. It is the evening of fan shows. Of course it is. Next up, it's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show with the guys from the 9 Years podcast, Kevin Boras and Hannah Kitcher. We are going to be reflecting on that defeat to Fleetwood Town yesterday, looking ahead to the game with Accrington Stanley next weekend. Of course, they didn't play because they had Bury this weekend, and that game was postponed by the EFL. Plenty of other stuff to discuss. Transfers in and outs. They've obviously got some time to bring some more faces in. The League One and League Two deadline doesn't shut until the beginning of September, of course. And there's also a game, and I need to clarify this with the guys when we come back as to whether I'm allowed to even say the name of the club. But yes, a Carabao Cup contest with their, not local rivals, but their close rivals. It's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. We'll see you after the news.
This is Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.